many troubled marriages. And she makes the case for that position in this book. Her basic arguments being that divorce hurts everybody involved, that the single life is not what it's cracked up to be, and that, generally speaking, staying married is better for you. Diane Medved is a clinical psychologist who specializes in short-term therapy with couples and with people who are making important life choices and who are at points of difficult transitions. She's the author of a couple of other books, including Children to Have or Have Not, and First Comes Love, Deciding Whether or Not to Get Married. She's also written feature articles for Ladies Home Journal, for McCall's, Glamour, Mademoiselle, and other magazines, and she makes her home in California. She's talking with us this morning by telephone, and as we talk, if you have questions or comments, maybe you have some experiences of your own you would like to relate, we would be happy to hear from you. The local telephone number here in Champaign-Urbana is 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line so that no matter where you are, you can use that line and we'll pay for the call. That number is 800-222-9455. There the exchange is different. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Ms. Medved, hello.
Yes.
Thanks very much for giving us some of your time.
Oh, it's a pleasure, David.
I would like to have you say right up front that there are exceptions to your argument about staying together is better, and that there are circumstances where you would say to people, yes, it would be best to end that relationship. In what cases would you still say that was the way to go?
Of course, these are the extreme cases. Mm. There are cases where there is abuse, either emotional or physical abuse, where perhaps one partner has a drug problem or an alcohol problem, where he or she refuses to get help or refuses to do anything about the problem. Or, unfortunately, there are some cases where one partner has to accept the rejection of the other person, where they've been abandoned, especially perhaps in cases where there have been affairs and one person has left and just decided to make a new life and offers no hope of reconciliation. But I think those cases are few and far between, given the number of divorces and the sharp increase in the divorce rate that we've experienced over the past several years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it used to be that people, when they heard of a marriage in trouble, would say, stay together, stay together. But now we've gone too far in the other direction, where divorce is fashionable and where movie stars are getting them, and we think we can follow that example and then turn around, have a great singles life, fall in love again, and immediately get married, which really ignores the problem that from 2 to 7 years, and often for the rest of your life, you're causing suffering not only to yourself but to many people around you and hurting society at large as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I provided this book as a balance against this message that we're hearing too often in our society, and to shake the shoulders of people who are in marriages in trouble and make them see that divorce is not the answer, that usually it's a cure that's worse than the disease in the marriage.
Yeah. I wanted to talk in some detail about the various kinds of, you know, the arguments that are supplied by sometimes friends, family, certainly the popular culture, things that people may just, you know, beliefs that people may have that lead them out of marriage. So we can talk in detail about some of those things. I guess, generally speaking, though, what you are working against, in a way, is the sort of grass is greener syndrome that humans are so prone to, that feeling that things got to be better somewhere else, and that what I really got to do is get out of here so I can get to that other place where things are going to be better.
Well, yeah, I think lots of times, though, the misery in a marriage is a subjective thing. The grass is greener is usually used when people talk about the lies and the lures of the singles life. They think being married in general is a negative compared to the excitement that awaits for them out there on the other side of the fence. But a lot of times people think that they're leaving something that's worse than it really is, and they don't realize what marriage is and that perhaps they are playing a part in their own misery.
Mm-hmm.
So that we have to redefine what a happy marriage is, and lots of times people's expectations far exceed what they have any right to expect. So when you say the grass is greener, there's two sides to that. How brown is the grass on your side? And then again, how green is the grass on the other side?
So you think a lot of it has to do with the fact that maybe people, before they get married, really don't know what marriage is all about.
I think in many cases, people have been led to have such high expectations about it. And maybe a lot of people I know, for example, have waited until they were in their 30s to get married, and especially many women that I've counseled. And then at that point, they have built up in their mind, I'm not going to settle for somebody who just is okay. I want my person to be, and they have a whole long list of ideas about this person. And at the same time, over the years, they've gotten very settled in their own habits and gotten comfortable with their own lifestyles. And that makes it difficult for them to compromise. It makes it difficult for them to see the other person as an individual and to so-called lower their standards, which it isn't really. What it is really is the idea of marriage being a compromise and being acceptance of some things and negotiation on other things. And so people are often unwilling to do that. That's why in the first year or 5 years of marriage, we find the highest divorce rate. And I've counseled many couples over the last several months who have said, well, we've been together for 2 years or a year and a half or a year, and we can't make it work. We want to get out. Well, that's the time they should be negotiating what those expectations are and making it work.
Hmm. One of the things that, you know, when people do point with alarm to the divorce rate, that some others will point to as kind of a counter. They will say, but, you know, the interesting thing is that it's true. A lot of marriages break up, and yet these people then go on and they go get married again. So that somehow they're, you know, it's not that they're so much down on the institution, it's that they're telling themselves, well, you know, it wasn't the right person that time, and that next time if I make a better choice, things will go well.
That's right.
Do people deceive themselves when they say that?
Well, that's part of the problem that's actually fueling the divorce rate, because they blame it on the other person. They say, I didn't pick well, or we're not well matched, and, you know, this other person did X, Y, and Z. Therefore, they negate whatever role they had in the problem marriage and take that same problem into a new relationship. And perhaps then they fuel, again, a second divorce or a third divorce. We find a lot of people have had one divorce, then are not so hesitant to get a second or third divorce, and that's why the rate is so high. It isn't that half of everybody who gets married, it's that there's a lot of people, I mean, who gets married gets divorced. Mm-hmm. It's that there are a lot of people who get divorced repeatedly, and that's the problem. If you take the same characteristics into the next relationship, and you don't change yourself, you don't see the role that you had in the breakup of your marriage, then you're never going to improve, and your chances for another breakup are higher. That's why I suggest to couples that, yes, there are problems in marriages, but you need to work through those problems. Every marriage has its ups and downs, and in many cases, it's darkest before the dawn, and you need to work through that and then see the role that you as an individual are playing in the problems of your marriage.
Well, I have a caller here. We'll bring them into our conversation. Our guest this morning is psychologist Diane Medved, and we're talking with her about her book, The Case Against Divorce. If you have questions or comments, the local lines are all open. 333-9455 is the number, and we'll talk with somebody here on our toll-free line. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Am I on?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, I have a premarital problem. I was engaged to this girl, and all of a sudden she disappeared for a week, and I found out she was with her old boyfriend.
Uh-huh.
And I was led into deception, and anyhow, I ultimately found out certain things about it, and she claimed that nothing went on between them, that it was an act of like a brother and sister being together. They slept in the same bed, and I just wondering, it still burns in me, and I'm still wondering whether I should get married to her or not. What do you think of the end result?
Well, I don't think that you should get married to her until you're absolutely comfortable with her behavior, and I think you need to talk about this problem further. It's really unlikely that somebody can have a completely platonic relationship with an old boyfriend. That's very highly unusual. And I think that this problem needs to be resolved before you get married to her. Frankly, it seems like her behavior is such that she is not totally committed to you. Even though she says, yes, well, I'm just like a brother and sister with my old boyfriend, she knows, I think she probably knew in her heart of hearts, that being away, disappearing for a week, not telling you, being with her old boyfriend, would be things that would upset you, that would not be conducive to your good relationship.
That's exactly what she told me, that it would upset me. I wouldn't understand. But I didn't like the fact, I told her, I says, if she would have told me about it and tried to make something honorable that was dishonorable, I would have been better for you. I've always respected her.
Of course. Well, she knew that she was doing something wrong, and she also knew that it was not good for her relationship with you. And frankly, for her to do this behavior before your marriage, shows that perhaps after the marriage it's even going to be worse unless you really work to resolve the problems. So I wouldn't get married to her, frankly, until I was completely confident of her behavior, until you negotiated the terms of your exclusivity, and frankly, that may never occur.
Well, we made a commitment that we were not to see anyone unless we were telling each other about it, and I agreed to it. And she did this, like I said, deceptively, and told me nothing was... She just disappeared, claiming other things. She was going with her sister and so forth.
Well, anybody who does something deceptive, even before her marriage to you, as I said, that portends very badly for your future after marriage. So, frankly, I would hold off. Even if you feel that you love her, put your emotions on hold for a moment and look at this situation objectively and see if she's the kind of honorable person who you want to commit the rest of your life to.
She claims she never did anything like this before. That's what she claims, but the way I look at it, one light covers up another lie.
Well, but then, yeah, and you have to also ask the question, if she never did it before, why would she do it now? What is it about her relationship with you that made her want to do that now?
She claims she wasn't sure of her former love for this other guy, and she wanted to clear it up. And she says, I'm better off for it. That way she knows. She says, in fact, when she first saw him, that she knew it was the wrong thing to do. She didn't feel comfortable with him. She knew it was wrong. But she still spent that time period with him.
Exactly. So you have to really, I think that her motives are very questionable. And even though you want to believe her, and even though you want to save the relationship, I think you need some time and some distance and perhaps some therapy together before you make that final commitment.
Well, I asked her to go to counseling to somewhere, and she kind of disagreed, and then she agreed, and that's kind of up in the air right now.
Well, I hope that you can get her to go with you.
How could I clear this thorn, this burning in my emotions of this?
I think it would be good in counseling for you to really directly say, I have this horrible feeling that's burning inside of me. I don't feel that I have my trust for you anymore. And before we can stay together, tell her we need to work on building this up.
She claims that it bothers her for me to talk about it, that it's driving her crazy because I keep bringing it up, but I have to bring it up periodically. I'm slowing down on it, but I'm still not comfortable with the fact that the event took place.
Well, that's why you need the counseling. I think in that environment, you'll get some help from your therapist to not only express your problem right now, but to change the communication that you have between you and your partner for the future.
Are there signs that I could look for that could rectify the situation by what she says now?
Well, you know, it's difficult because you don't trust her. You don't trust her past. And I think it's a slow process that she's going to have to prove herself again and be devoted to you and be the kind of woman that you'd like to have for your wife for a period of time so that your trust can be restored.
This old boyfriend called her up and she turned him down, if that means anything.
You know, the other thing that doesn't sound so good about that is that she can easily be tempted by these outside influences. And when he called, first of all, then she decided to go off and meet with him. And if she was real strong in her love for you and real firm in her commitment to you, then that would not be anything attractive. She wouldn't want to do it.
You mean the first time?
The first time?
Yeah, well, it never happened after that, she said. It was only one time. She claims it was only one call, but I believe it was more than one call that got her to change her mind.
Well, see, you have a lot of things that you need to clear up with her. So I would take that time in counseling and do that before I go ahead and get married.
Otherwise, just hold off.
Hold off. Definitely hold off until you're completely confident. I don't think that divorce would be the answer later. It's better to clear up any problems that you have long before the marriage.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay.
You're welcome.
We're a little bit off the topic, and yet it doesn't bother me too much, both because this is another area of interest of yours and because it's so tightly connected with what we're talking about.
Well, I'll tell you, David, it's very interesting to me that since the book has come out, which is The Case Against Divorce, I've gotten hundreds of calls and letters from people across the country. It's only been out for a few weeks. From people who are in a very similar situation post-marriage, where a husband has found out that his wife wants to leave him. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, there are you know, outside men that are sort of beckoning to her after she's been a very faithful or devoted wife. And this is a problem that has come up over and over. I've been totally shocked by the number of cases that have come to me where a man is being abandoned by his wife. And this is a somewhat similar situation, despite the fact they haven't been married yet.
Hmm. Well, you in your book you talk about the lure and the lie of the single's life and the lies about being single that destroy marriage, and basically, you know, these are these things that we are told and we tell ourselves about how if you are married and perhaps there are some things that you're dissatisfied with, you start thinking about the fact that somehow being single is going to be great, that your sex life will be better, your life will be more exciting, people will love you more, that you'll have great freedom, you can do whatever you want, you'll meet new people, that, you know, there are all these things that we tell ourselves and friends tell us. You know, your friends tell us, oh, you ought to get out of that relationship. I can introduce you to some fabulous women, and you can do whatever you want, come and go when you please. You know, no, you don't have to deal with the responsibilities. You don't have to cut the grass, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but of course the friends who tell you that are only your single and divorced friends. The married friends wouldn't be the ones to say that. And that is a problem, because a lot of friends who have been divorced have a vested interest not only in your happiness, which of course they do want, but also in justifying their own decision. They have a belief and a philosophy which is consonant with what we're hearing in the media, that if there's a problem, get out. And unfortunately, I think it's pervasive all around, and it's very hard for people who are in a troubled marriage to resist that.
I guess the difficulty I see is that when you present people with, you know, when you talk with them about these things we believe, these things that we're told, that when you look at them in the cold light of day, you can realize, you know, it's not like that. That things are not likely to be that much more wonderful. You appreciate that in your head. The problem is that you also sort of feel these things in your gut, and it's difficult to get those, you know, your head and your heart together, because your emotions pull you one way, and maybe if you can engage your reason, it's going to pull you another way. But at very emotional times, it's difficult to engage your reason. You know, you're going with other kinds of feelings.
Absolutely. That's absolutely right, especially if you're in a miserable marriage and you're feeling anger. When you're angry, you're willing to get out of that anger in almost any way you can. One of the ways may be even retribution. You may see the idea of moving out from your partner as a way to get even with him or her. And these things are so powerful, it's very hard to control yourself. And that's another reason why I wrote the book, because I think many friends who encourage divorce should turn around their behavior, should stop their friends from getting divorced, should be saying to them, look at what you're doing, not, okay, whatever you feel is the way to go. I think our society has far, far gone in the direction of saying emotions are the most legitimate criterion for behavior. It's part of this me decade. You know, I'm one of the baby boomers, and I know a lot of my friends, and myself too, were sucked into the idea that, you know, go with the flow, whatever you feel is right, don't be judgmental. The term non-judgmental was very fashionable. And I think all these things are wrong, that they're to the detriment of our health and happiness, that really there are some things that you have to consider that are right or wrong, one of them being to stay in your family environment, to keep the marriage going, to care about another person and not just your own feelings, the idea of compromise. All these things are values that our parents held that we eschewed in the 60s and 70s, and now because of our own situations are coming to recognize we're not such bad ideas after all.
Do you think that in the past, when divorce was less common, that people had better marriages, or it was more simply a fact that divorce for a lot of people just wasn't an option?
I think that there's both going on. That people, because divorce was not an option, people were motivated to work on their marriages. They were motivated not just to stick it out, and certainly there were cases like that that were pitiful, but I think in many cases they said, okay, we can't get a divorce. It's a big shame. People would look on me terribly. I've got to look at who I've got. I've got to make the best of my situation. You know, I've got lemons here. Let's make some lemonade. And that's what people had to do, because divorce was not as much an option for them. Since it's become fashionable, people say, okay, we've got problems, I'm going to walk out. I'm not even going to look at the problem. I'm not even going to look at my partner. I'm not going to take these lemons and make lemonade. I'm going to take these lemons and put them down the garbage disposal. That, I think, is a problem, because lives that could be happy with a little bit of work are being discarded, and people don't realize the unhappiness that they're walking into.
Yeah. Well, I have several callers here to talk with. We'll go to line one. Hello.
Me?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, I was wondering if there's been verbal abuse and it's been a long marriage. if she feels as this can be forgiven by an unforgiving person.
Now, could you give me a little more about your situation? What do you mean by verbal abuse in a long marriage?
Well, say a third of a century. Say,
has he been abusing you?
Well, verbally.
Verbally? And you have not been forgiving of him?
No, he hasn't been forgiving of me.
He's not forgiving of you?
Right.
Well, the question is, what did you do? He's been verbally abusing you, and what have you been doing?
I don't know.
You just feel like a victim?
Yes.
He's just been verbally abusing you all these years?
Right.
And now you want to get out?
Well, I don't want to, but I don't see any other way out.
Now, is the problem that he doesn't want to change?
Right.
Is he willing to go to counseling with you?
No.
Does he see that any of it is his problem?
I don't think so.
See, that's the thing. Are you able to communicate with him? I mean, what kind of situations start this verbal abuse?
Almost anything.
What, he comes home from work and just...
Right. Had a bad day.
Uh-huh. And he just what does he do?
Oh, I don't speak right. The house is disorderly. I fried apples, and he's never seen them before, or anything.
Uh-huh. And he doesn't think there's a problem?
Well, yeah, I think he thinks there's a problem, but I don't think he's willing to do anything about it.
Does he know that you're considering leaving him?
I don't know.
See, this is a problem. I think you need a lot more communication back to him.
But he won't talk.
Well, he talks, and he certainly says some things, and those are things you don't like to hear. So you know he talks, but he doesn't want to talk about his feelings that are appropriate, you're saying.
Okay.
I think what you need to do is maybe then write him a letter. Write down your feelings about it. Say how these things hurt you. Say what you're considering. Say you don't want to get a divorce. You think it's a horrible thing. It's a last resort, but you're feeling so crushed by what he's done to you repeatedly every day, telling you what a horrible person you are, that you have to save yourself. And that's why you're considering divorce.
Okay.
And tell him in this letter, and you can try and tell him verbally, but it sounds like he doesn't really listen to you and you don't have much practice talking to him. Tell him in this letter that you really don't want the divorce, and because of that, in order to prevent it, you'd like him to go to counseling with you.
Okay.
And get an answer from him.
Okay. Why does he also lacks proper support?
Who lacks proper support?
What if he doesn't provide proper support?
You mean financial support?
Or emotional support.
Well, I think that you need to go to counseling by yourself then. You need to get this for yourself because it sounds like you've been worn down so much from so many years of hearing that you're such a horrible person that you need to get some strength. You need that strength. And once you get a little strength in yourself, you'll be able to communicate with him a little better and let him see how serious his behavior is.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. One more thing. When you get a divorce, if you get a divorce, is it true that all your friends or your acquaintance always forsake you?
No, I think that's not always true. I think what they have to do, though, they end up taking sides. And they, you know, and if they're going to stick by you and be your friend, then they feel lots of times like they have to then say negative things about your husband.
Uh-huh.
And say, okay, well, they're trying to make you strong. So they say, yes, you're right. You left him. He was a bad guy. And therefore, they take your side, and if you ever think about reconciliation, it becomes very difficult for them to then become his friend, too. So in a divorce, lots of times it splits people in half. They either have to be your friend or his friend, and if you want to get back, that makes it a lot harder.
I see. So do you think that there is a possibility to change, for him to change?
There is, but he has to realize that he is the problem, or that he's at least a large part of the problem. And you have to realize, too, that by letting him abuse you this way, emotionally and verbally, that you're abetting the problem, too. That every time that he says something bad against you and you take it, then that gives him license to say it again.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
What you have to do is say, this is not proper way for a husband to speak to his wife.
Okay.
I should be the one person that you cherish more above anybody else.
Okay.
And I'm not going to accept it. And when he starts to do that, instead of sitting there taking it, walk out of the room. Turn around and say, I don't think this is proper. And walk out of the room. Don't let him do it to you.
Okay. Very good. Excellent. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Bye.
We have a couple of other callers waiting. We'll get right to them in just a moment. Diane Medved is our guest this morning. She's a clinical psychologist. We're talking with her about some of the things in her book, The Case Against Divorce. It has just been out a couple of weeks. Donald Fine is the publisher. This morning, our guest is Diane Medved. She is a clinical psychologist. She specializes in short-term therapy with couples and with people who are making life choices and who are in transitions. She is the author of several books, including Children to Have or Have Not and First Comes Love, Deciding Whether or Not to Get Married. And her most recent book is The Case Against Divorce. In the book, she makes the argument that people too easily and too quickly go to divorce as a way of solving their problems, and that in most cases, divorce is not a good idea, that it hurts everybody concerned, that being single is not as wonderful as people might think, and that considering all things for most couples, staying together is better than being divorced. If you have questions or comments, we do have lines open. The local number is 333-9455. The toll-free line, 800-222-9455. So we have other callers here. Let's go to line number two. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I'm enjoying your show, and I just had a comment and then a comment, the first thing I was thinking of is that in the generation she was describing, where people growing up in the 60s and 70s, the sort of if it feels good, do it generation, it seems like they've had, we, I would include myself, may have had the idea that as long as a relationship feels good, then you're in love. The moment it doesn't feel good, then maybe you look elsewhere, or maybe you're out of love or whatever, but there's no real work involved, as I would, compare, my parents' generation to really working with a marriage and working with a partner and trying to resolve conflict. And I think that's really true, that people, if you find yourself kind of floundering, well, instead of putting forth any effort, you're told, well, maybe it's not real anymore.
Right.
And that just seems like a big lie.
It's really true, yeah. That whole line of I've fallen out of love is so much justification for getting divorced.
Yeah. When really neither party may be putting much effort into staying in love. But another thing I was thinking of is I've heard it said that a big enemy to America, to our culture, is the word average, and that people are afraid to have an average marriage. And so when the average marriage is probably a good marriage, could you describe, or are you able to describe what your definition of an average marriage would be?
Well, I agree with you, first of all, that the term average doesn't sound very appealing. Gee, let's get married and have an average marriage. But I also agree that you're right, that an average marriage is probably a good marriage. Most of the opinion polls that are taken across the country, when asked about the satisfaction of people in their marriages, they say they're happy. They say they're satisfied with their marriages. And I think the average marriage, given that data, is a good marriage. And that an average marriage, I mean, there are a lot of people with problems, but I think an average marriage has its ups and downs, and that the benefit of working through any temporary problems far exceeds the pain that any couples feel when they're going through those stages. The average marriage does have its ups and downs. It has periods of time that are more difficult, such as when the children are young and there's a lot of tension and pressure on everyone to do a lot of activities, especially the demands of children. And then there are other times where it's a lot easier after children are grown in the first years of marriage, when things are pretty stable before children come. Those are easier times, and people enjoy that too. And I think also the average marriage, if you're looking at a long-term situation, is a wonderful thing because you get to experience the highs and lows, the emotions that can only come from sharing long periods of time with someone else, where you have the joys of a birth and you have the sorrows of a death. And that can only be endured in the context of a long-term marriage where people are sharing not just now what feels good to them, as you mentioned earlier, but looking toward a future, knowing that if they get through this sorrowful time right now, they'll have something better to look forward to. They'll have the graduation of the troubled teenager into a better life. So, when you use the term average, again, this is such generalizations. And you have to look at every person is so different. That's a miracle of marriage, too, that you can discover the individual personality of your partner and develop yourself within a safe haven, a context that you know is going to be there for you should you decide to venture out and take some risks.
Right. And how would you, one last thing is, how would you encourage communication? I mean, do you rely more on the spontaneity, or do you know what I'm saying?
Well, I think communication is something that can be spontaneous, but also takes a little bit of effort on the parts of the partners. One of the things that I encourage people to do is when they get home from work, even though you're tired and you just want to sit there and ruminate in a beer or something, the thing to do is to take 15 minutes, give yourself 10 to unwind a little bit by yourself privately. Don't make any demands on the other person. But then sit down with your partner for 15 minutes uninterrupted. Now, that may be going out to dinner. That may be just sitting there across the dinner table from each other. That may be taking a walk. That may be sitting in the living room and turning off the telephone. But take 15 uninterrupted minutes for each of you to tell what happened in your day. I did this, and go chronologically. In the morning, I did this, this, and this. I had this for lunch. I went out with so-and-so for lunch. I did this, this, and this in the afternoon. And these are the things that I'm thinking about. These are the problems I'm confronting. And give your partner the opportunity to be that unqualified support that is the role of a good spouse. And that's one thing, if you do that every day, that is such a head start toward good communication, just those 15 minutes every day, that it'll be easier for you to have that natural, spontaneous communication that occurs the rest of the day.
Thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. We have someone else here. We'll go to line 3.
Yes.
Hello.
I think a lot of what the guest today is saying is very, very good. I just would caution again that there are some times when things do not work out, and I think that has to be considered on an individual situation. I think that people do grow and change as they get older, as they pass through different life stages, and certain choices that one may make early are not necessarily ones that that would last or continue later on. I'm not saying that older folks are necessarily wiser, but I think there is a certain truth to that. And I think that is something to be taken into consideration. I think it's very critical that when people go into a relationship, if they are considering long-term commitment, that they work out things ahead of time to avoid circumstances that would lead to disruption later on. But I think sometimes the world, well, it's an imperfect place and things happen. And I think that's something that I would caution people to say, well, I'm not going to say keep a marriage at all costs. I'm going to say look at it and think about it, and if you can work on it and get some help with it, great. But if it's something that is becoming abusive in one form or another, or degrading, or things that people are just becoming unwilling to work together, then I think there are times and places where it's necessary. And I know I cannot be convinced otherwise. I'm not going to tell other people what to do, but
No, I agree with you. Have you been divorced?
No.
So how did you come to this?
I've just been looking around and seeing things, and one doesn't have to have been in a marriage to realize it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, however, you have to see that there are different gradations.
Oh, sure.
Right, that first of all, I agree with you 100% that people need to look very seriously at their values, expectations, and feelings before they get married. That is absolutely essential. In fact, I wrote a book on it. And I think that's the crucial thing. The life partner that you choose is the most important decision you'll ever make, the most influential decision of your life. But then I think people far too frequently say, as they've been married, we've grown apart. And I think that's a choice. You can choose what kind of activities you go into. You can choose the ones that you have in common with your partner, and you can say, all right, I'll give you X amount of time to pursue things that we don't have in common. And that can work within a marriage. You don't have to be identical. You can grow apart to some extent, but I'll tell you, the problem marriages occur when those differences are in basic values. And the kind of values I'm talking about have to do with really what you believe. For example, whether or not to have children. I've worked with many couples, I wrote a book on that topic too, who have had to split up because one absolutely refuses to have children and the other one desperately wants children.
Yeah, well, I think that's a very important case in point. If people haven't had this self-awareness, and we all at times less aware of what we want until we're confronted maybe with a decision perhaps later than we should be. You don't know that. Perhaps we should know that, but sometimes we don't. And I think that in those cases where there are these gross underlying differences that through our own lack of self-awareness or whatever, or changes in people, then that is a time when it's best to separate. I'm not saying it's ever fun or nice, but I think if there are these basic worldview differences, so if you didn't realize them before, you'd better realize them before you get yourself deeper into problems.
I think we're in agreement. However, I think the number of cases where that is a problem is a lot smaller than the divorce rate reflects. We are in agreement, however, that when you have gross differences in values, there may be no alternative but divorce.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's necessarily a good thing, but I sometimes think it's very, very necessary. So, thank you.
Thank you for calling.
I guess, much like the caller, I find a great deal of sense in what you say, and we have just sort of hinted at what's in the book. There is much more there than we have talked about, and I think it, your advice and what you have to say is really well taken. I guess though, I keep in a way coming back to this feeling that still in all, there are some people that is to say, some couples who just should not be married to each other. Those two individuals should not be trying to live together, for whatever reason, and that there's a certain point at which, you might as well give up trying to put the proverbial square peg in the round hole because it just won't go.
I agree, as you know, that there are exceptions, but over the last 30 years, the divorce rate has tripled. It has tripled. Do you really believe that a significant number of those divorces could not have been avoided? My premise is that we take divorce far too casually, and it's so easy to say, well, we're just the exceptions. We're the two people that aren't well matched, and turn around and face the door, rather than saying, look, at one time we were in love. At one time we really believed that we were going to spend the rest of our lives together. We have some basis here. Why can't we then revise our expectations, compromise what we believe to be right at this moment, and see that maybe we have something that can be saved? I think that because the divorce rate has tripled, that's evidence enough that there are many people who are getting divorced who really don't have to.
Yeah, okay. Well, other calls here. Line one next.
Hello? Yeah,
yes, hello.
I was agreeing very much with the author. I am so happy to hear people talk like that because I've heard for so long the idea of get out if it's not working, and I agree with you that it's just too easy. I particularly am concerned because I'm a school social worker, and I deal a lot with children in school, and I've seen how it really hurts children. And I wonder if people really have thought about that, because what you heard, the conventional wisdom was, well, it's better for the parents to have a divorce than for the children to live amidst this arguing at home. And I just really find it's just the children really need their real, as they call it, their real mother and their real father as much as possible.
Absolutely. You bring up an excellent point. In fact, there's a new book that's come out to confirm that. In fact, this research has shown that even 10 years after the divorce, children are suffering immensely from their parents' separation. And even adult children whose parents separated when they were younger are finding all kinds of ramifications, such as the fact that it's very difficult for them to get into relationships. They don't want to commit because they have a fear of the divorce that they saw around them when they were children. And if they do commit, their divorce rate is a lot higher, meaning that if there's a divorce in the family, the family suffers for generations, mm-hmm. that the children of divorce carry this with them, and then if they do get married, they may have divorces, therefore creating a second generation that are carrying these ruinous ripples, as I call them, from the first problem. So you're very wise in suggesting that people should stay together oftentimes for the sake of the children, not in misery, but to see that what they're doing is going to hurt those children forever, and then use that as a motivation to heal the problems in the marriage.
Yes, I see. We agree totally on that. Thank you.
Okay,
thank you.
Next caller here, line two. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
I agree with the previous caller, and I also agree with the guest. But there's something that bothers me about it because I think that it sounds like the author has given a little bit too much credit to previous generations who may have stayed together for the wrong reasons. And I realize that the problem of divorce can carry on for generations, but I think what I see happening is that as an alternative to that, other problems have carried on for generations or can be carried on for generations. We don't have to look very far to find cases of abuse that are generational.
Well, you know,
and the result of couples staying together. And I realize that may be the exception, but...
No, frankly, I think that you're absolutely right. In fact, in cases of abuse and incest and those kind of cases, I think that those are cases where the marriage should cease immediately and that there should be tolerated no leeway in those kinds of situations because it's for the detriment of the children and everyone concerned that kind of situation be tolerated. So you're absolutely right. In cases of abuse, and those often are multi-generational, those marriages have to stop, or at least the situation has to be totally rearranged so that that can't happen anymore.
Yeah, it just at one point sounded like you were sort of sanctifying the previous generation, saying that they were more tolerant of those problems and more that they held the virtue up of continuing a bad situation, continuing a bad domestic situation.
Well, what I think that they did that was laudable, and I agree that continuing a bad situation is never the answer. But what I think they did that was very good was they had in their minds that their first preference would be to stay married. And therefore, that would give them often motivation to keep the marriage together and take the problem and turn it around. I don't think that it's good to just stay together and say divorce is not an option, therefore I'm going to be miserable the rest of my life and suffer. That is definitely not preferable. But what it should be is that because divorce is so horrendous and now we're realizing what it does to people, that it should be an absolutely last recourse and that people should be much more willing to go through counseling to perhaps suffer through the pain of realizing your own contribution to the problem and changing yourself and compromising yourself. So many people say it's the other person. And what I'm saying is it was a virtue to say, because divorce is not an answer, I'm going to look at my role and see what I can do to make the situation better.
Okay, let's go to one more caller here on our toll-free line. Hello.
You on the toll-free line?
Yes, ma'am.
I didn't hear what you said there. There was some static. We, I guess, are an example, my husband and my marriage, of what you had said, except that we, often we went to counseling and tried things, but we never were really happy until finally my husband got into a group, Adult Children of Alcoholics group, and did a lot of reading and got a lot of things straight in his life. I worry what the effect it has had on the children, though, because now they are grown and have left home, but we can see problems in them that I feel like the tension in our house contributed to. I wonder, I don't know why we stayed together. I think it was because we saw that it wasn't a bed of roses, just getting a divorce and going out and dating again. But I do wonder, now that they've seen their dad change so much, do you think that'll help some of the problems that we caused with them when they were because of the problems of the bad marriage?
Okay, well, first of all, I think that you shouldn't feel so badly about the problems that you inflicted on them. Yes, I'm sure it wasn't a bed of roses, and it wasn't terrific in your household. But you did spare them the worst trauma of having a divorce. And as bad as your marriage was, you kept trying to make it work. And they had an example of people who were tenacious to make their marriage work. That's a good example. That's something that they'll carry positively with them throughout their lives. Now, it's true their home may not have been great, but they saw you survive it, and they saw their father survive to become a better person now. And they're going to look at that example with pride, and that will be something positive for them. And again, remember that staying together, even though it wasn't great, is far better than divorce. They would have suffered a lot more had you gotten a divorce. They would have tried to mediate between you. Depending on their ages, they may have felt that it was their fault. They may have had fantasies of you reconciling. It would have been really bad, and certainly financially it would have been worse for them. They would have had a worse standard of living had you gotten the divorce. So feel good, at least, that you stuck it out, and now you have a bright, rosy future. They're looking at that with pride, and they're very proud of you right now for that. And I think that you should take heart and not feel negatively about your past.
Thank you.
Okay.
We're certainly enjoying our lives together now.
I'm very pleased to hear that. You're a wonderful example.
Thanks.
Well, thank you for the call. We're at the point where we're going to have to end. There's one final thing that I just wanted to ask, because I know that some people who have been through divorce will be listening, I'm sure, and recognizing many sorts of things as they listen to you talk, and perhaps as some of the people that you have talked to are still feeling some feelings of failure, guilt, whatever, as a result now looking back at their divorce. Can you say anything, any wisdom or comfort that you have for those people?
Yes, absolutely. I didn't write my book for people who've been divorced to make them look back and feel badly about it. Anybody who's been divorced should look at their lives toward the future, should pick up the pieces and learn from that experience. Say, it was difficult, it was bad, I had some miserable times, some miserable years. Now, what can I gain from that? And if they're willing to look inward and say, maybe I contributed this way, I can learn to change to be this way, they have a wonderful future ahead of them. I didn't write the book for them. I wrote it for people in marriages to shake their shoulders and say, maybe it's not too late for you. But if you've already had a divorce, I would say to you, learn from that so that you don't carry the same baggage into your next relationship, so that you have a fresh start. And I think that you've got a positive future if you're willing to look inside yourself and say, how can I compromise? How can I make my relationship different from the one before? Hmm.
Thanks very much for being with us this morning. I appreciate
it. My pleasure. Thank you, David.
Our guest this morning, Diane Medved. Her book is The Case Against Divorce, published by Donald Fine. It's just been out for a couple of weeks.